SBS Radio.
Here we have Tara Gujadu, the co-founder and also director of TAC, the Traditional Arts and Ethnology and Culture Center in Luang Prabang. Recently, there is issue, even now, the issue hasn't been resolved in regard to Lao Oma people in northern Laos. Their motif, their textile has been used Italian fashion industry called Max Mara. Can you take us through the latest updates about this situation?
Sure. Well, let me first perhaps start with, you know, how we discovered it. And that happened about 3 weeks ago that an ex-colleague of ours happened to walk past the Max Mara store in Croatia and immediately recognized the Oma patterns because she worked with us at one time. So she immediately sent us photographs, and our immediate thought was, oh, perhaps Max Mara has done a collaboration with the Oma people, which would be great, you know, if they had partnered with a community and some artisans to add Oma patterns to their clothes. But it soon became clear because we looked at their website that there was no acknowledgement of the Oma people at all in descriptions. And when our colleague looked at the tags in the stores, they didn't there was no acknowledgement of the Oma. And also, actually, the patterns are simply printed, so duplicated. They're not hand worked as they are on traditional Oma clothes. So we have reached out to Max Mara by several different emails and Facebook, et cetera, to ask them, you know, to please recognize that these are Oma designs and that they should acknowledge them. At first, we heard nothing back from them. And again, we wrote and said, you know, actually, if you're not acknowledging them even, and there's been no money or permission to use these, you should really pull these clothes, you know. And we heard nothing from them. So then we started a social media campaign basically to pressure Max Mara to recognize that traditional motifs and textiles of ethnic minority groups anywhere, but particularly in developing countries like Laos, are not free, you know, and that they belong to a community and a culture. So Max Mara did respond to us with two letters, two emails that came from their legal department. And basically they said to us, we had a piece of vintage fabric and we interpreted it creatively in this line of clothing. And after this, we're not going to use it anymore. And we deny any wrongdoing. And they asked us to remove our social media posts, which they said are denigrating, you know, damaging their reputation. That's it. So they didn't accept any responsibility for it. They refused to take the clothes down, refused to acknowledge the Oma completely. So, they also asked us not to publish their letters, so we respected that. Yeah. But we have published our own responses to them. So we wrote back to them two times, and we also wrote to the CEO of the fashion group. And all of those letters are on our Facebook page. So, but that was over a week ago now, and we haven't heard from them since. So I think that Max Mara has gone silent in the hopes that we will simply go away and that we'll forget about it and lose steam, and then they can get away with it.
That's a pretty alarming issue in regard to intellectual property or minority or artisans' rights. Yeah, from your social media page, it's pretty impressive. Thousands shares, over 4,000 petitions signed. Does this social pressure has any impact on your campaign at all?
Yes, I think that actually we've seen, I mean, this has been, I mean, this is not the first time that a fashion company has taken designs from other, from ethnic groups in developing countries. I mean, there's an example of that of the Bihor people, ethnic minority group in Romania, of the Mixe people in Mexico with Isabel Marant. So these all happened in the last few years. And as you know, with the Hmong as well.
Yes, that's correct.
This has been a common problem. And what we've seen is that, you know, there are no good international legal protections for these, for this cultural property at the moment. But social pressure, public pressure, and public outcry can show companies that people are noticing this and that it will damage their reputation. So we've seen that basically calling them out on this issue in public is maybe the best avenue we have at this time to fight this kind of, you know, plagiarism of cultural property.
Okay, so in terms of public pressure, how can people help, like individual organizations, NGO organizations, or the government in each different countries, or the the person who purchased those items, how what can they do to handle this this issue? In general terms of like intellectual property or motif or embroideries or patents, textiles of minority who are powerless and voiceless, and their property, intellectual properties, their textile has been utilized by other party, especially international fashion industry brand that didn't recognize their rights.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there aren't good legal protections at the moment. And though there is the World Intellectual Property Organization, which is a UN organization that works on these issues, you know, and they facilitate governments signing treaties and conventions to respect certain intellectual property rights. However, the problem is that with, you know, sort of traditional knowledge and what we could call traditional cultural expressions, it's much murkier, more, you know, ambiguous trying to protect these, because it's not the knowledge of just one person that has been developed. It's of a community, right? And it's been developed. It's constantly changing, as we know as well. You know, I mean, it's not like there's one example that's the original and that's that's the authentic and everything else is not correct. You know, it's, these are you know, dynamic cultural expressions. So trying to protect that, trying to define what a cultural expression is and how to protect it is actually quite complex. And the World Intellectual Property Organization, you know, has documents on their website, you know, to recommend how to approach this. I mean, some ideas are that people can, I mean, or communities like the Oma or Hmong or specific villages could issue trademarks, or they could create a brand, you know, certification marks, kind of become members of fair trade organizations. So those are ways in which they can help protect their intellectual property, you know, and governments like the Lao government or any government can support those communities to do that kind of work and to sign conventions that are at play. But it is still a complex, there's still no clear, you know, we register this cultural expression here and then it is protected legally, you know. And the other issue that some people have argued is that, you know, legal protections are not the only way that we can protect these cultural intellectual property of communities. Because as we know, I mean, Nexmara, for example, is a $1 billion company. You know, the Oma are a tiny ethnic minority. My organization is a very small, you know, social enterprise just here in Lompoang. If we were to build a court case, there's no way we would have the money to take it through, you know, to really fight them. So this is why, again, we're trying to educate the public with this case by sharing resources and sharing the debate in public. We can educate people that, you know, when companies do this, this is wrong, and that there's no money going to the people who developed this design and who use it in their daily lives. And if you see that a company is doing this, then you should not support that company, you know. So we hope that this will, you know, kind of continue the conversation in public and raise the awareness of the fashion industry that, you know, doing this is wrong, and that you will face public pressure if you do it, you know.
Recent international, especially UN Slavery Index and Modern Slavery, also indicates that millions and millions in Asia region were exploited.
Sure. I mean, I have to be honest, I'm not very familiar with the Slavery Convention. It's not an area in which we've worked in specifically. Our work is more with artisans in villages. We are a member of Fair Trade Laos, so we commit to paying fair wages, to not employing children, you know. So, you know, for sure, I think slavery and, you know, unfair work conditions are a major issue, particularly in Asia, as we know. It's not something that, you know, is directly related to this issue so much. But this week is also Fashion Revolution Week, which, you know, arose 5 or 6 years ago from the collapse of the Rana Plaza factory in Bangladesh, where, you know, over 1,000 factory workers died. And we recognized then the kind of conditions that people are working under, and the fact that so much of our clothing and apparel is produced by people who are underpaid, who do not have adequate working conditions and protections and safety. And so, I mean, I think recognizing that this week, that there are issues with unfair working conditions, with slavery, with protection of handicrafts and traditional knowledge, are all major problems in the fashion industry right now.
So do you think that ethnic minority or those people who were affected by these problems and the governments have done enough, like what you mentioned before, you have to do a trademark for your brand? They haven't done that. Is there any channel or possibility that they can do that, or the government is paying much attention or enacted a legislation to protect this aspect? Laos government just recently collaborates with the U.S. government looking to the consumer rights or intellectual property rights.
Yes, I mean, to be honest, this was an area that we were not, you know, very familiar with before this issue came up. But it is, I know that the government has begun within the last few years, and with the support of the U.S. government, stronger intellectual property protections in law. But unfortunately, you know, seeking intellectual property protections for all of the intellectual and cultural property of a country, especially one like Laos, which is so rich in culture. You know, we have so many different ethnic groups here, so many different cultural expressions. it's kind of, it's also a massive job, you know? So I think one of the issues is how do you, it's kind of knowing where to start, and how do you find the resources to tackle this issue. As we know, Laos is not a very rich country, you know, and the government struggles, you know, with the funding that they have. So I think it's unlikely that the government would be able to step in a strong way to protect these cultural property rights immediately.
In terms of Laos, it might be look like that, but how about the international situation?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's definitely the potential for more work to be done across borders. You know, for us particularly, you know, this has been an area in which we haven't done much work, but now that we've, you know, kind of been pulled into it and have now direct experience in it, we would like, once we kind of work through our campaign, one of our interests is reaching out to other organizations that are working on intellectual property rights for indigenous and minority communities to see how we could potentially work together to come up with better protections for these issues. So I think there is work that's being done. It's not always very well talked about, and a lot of times these issues tend to only be talked about when there's a problem, like this problem that has arisen here. But for sure, our organization is committed to working further on this issue and learning from other countries that have been successful in trying to protect the intellectual property of the ethnic groups in their country.
Do you think that the individual should shop ethically?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that there are a lot more indexes now. So, for example, there's a fashion transparency index that has just come out that talks about which companies are most transparent about their supply chain and their sourcing. There are fair trade labels. You know, the World Fair Trade Organization obviously is a well-known label. So as much as possible, trying to be an educated consumer and shop ethically can go a huge way at putting your money in the hands of companies that are doing well.
So in short, if minority heritage, properties, intellectual properties, or local wisdom need to be protected, they need to do their own trademark and register patents. Is that the way to go?
Yeah, I think it would be one part of an overall strategy to protect communities. You know, legal instruments are one, public pressure is another, encouraging fair trade. So there's a lot of things that we can do. And frankly, we need to approach it from many different angles if we want to see some change.
So governments also play important parts along with the fashion industry.
And absolutely.
Individuals and angel organizations like yours? Okay.
Yep, absolutely. I think that organizations like ours can help advocate for communities because a lot of communities like the OMA are sort of too small and remote to really have a strong voice. I would say for the Hmong community, one of the benefits you have is that you have a very strong and vocal diaspora community that lives overseas and are very good about advocating for cultural rights of the Hmong. So, you know, working with communities like that, also working with governments, both on this side in the home of the communities, but also on the other side in the home of the fashion brands. So in the United States and Italy and France, having them recognize that this is a priority is also important.
So how is the prospect of these campaigns going to be?
You know, it's hard to tell. The Max Mara, as we mentioned, has gone silent over the last week. I think they are now hoping that they can just wait us out We are continuing to contact press and to talk about it on social media. We've also recognized that there are retailers online, such as Saks Fifth Avenue and Harrods, who are selling this clothing. So we are so encouraging people to contact those companies to tell them, you know, that it's not acceptable to sell these clothes, because we have contacted them already several times to inform them that these clothes are made from plagiarized designs. So, you know, that we have a number of different ways in which we're still trying to keep up the pressure. And we will continue to do it as long as we still have the resources and the energy to do so.
Before we go, do you have any further comments in regard to this issue?
I guess I would say, I mean, we're really encouraged by how much interest has been in the topic. We've been really encouraged by all of the support we've had on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, by journalists who are willing to talk about it. And we would just encourage people to continue putting pressure on Max Mara and talking about it with their friends, to recognize that, you know, there are still big brands who are profiting off, you know, ethnic minority communities in developing countries. And, you know, they're basically kind of trying to get away with it, hoping that we'll all just be quiet. So we just encourage everybody to keep talking about it and hope that we'll succeed.
Okay, thank you very much for your story. Tara Gujado, the co-founder and director of the Traditional Arts and Ethnology Center in Luang Prabang, Lao PDR. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Tell us what you think. Rate this podcast on iTunes. It helps other people to find us.